You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including who's running for what position in California and Oregon, updates on Jackson County Fire District 5, and changes at the Shasta County Jail. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Candidate registrations have closed for the Oregon and California primaries. I talked to JPR's Roman Battaglia yesterday about some of the most watched races in our region. Hey there, Roman.
Hi, Maria.
So you've been following the campaign filings for a few of the open offices in our region. Let's start first with the federal offices. What's going on in Oregon?
So in Oregon, JPR is mostly covered by Congressional District 2, which covers all of southern and eastern Oregon. Currently, it's represented by Cliff Bentz, who's the only Republican from Oregon in Congress. Democrats haven't held this seat since 1980, so it's kind of Oregon's Republican stronghold. But there have been efforts to put a Democrat there, and this year is one of those efforts. They're kind of trying to ride the blue wave on, you know, anger against the Trump administration. So six Democrats have filed to run in the primary, and then two other Republicans have also filed to run against Bentz in the Republican primary. On the Democratic side, there's kind of candidates from all over the district, including from, you know, far north area and down here. I covered a debate between four of them back in February that's on our website. And then since then, two others have also filed, and they're all kind of pretty cordial with each other. They mostly have similar ideas, and they're mostly focused on just picking the right candidate to focus on the general election. But, you know, it is going to be hard to beat Cliff Bentz just with his fundraising he's had and, you know, the incumbent advantage that he has there.
Yeah. And now let's look at the state Senate, specifically the seat currently held by Jeff Golden, which covers Ashland and Medford. Golden recently announced he's not running for re-election. Who's filed to fill that seat?
Yeah, that was kind of a surprise to people, as Golden had originally filed to run for re-election, then decided not to. So now there's this gap, and a lot of people are seeking to fill that. There's five Democrats and then one Republican that have filed to run. The one Republican is Brad Hicks. He was most recently the CEO of the Chamber of Medford and Jackson County. And so he doesn't have political experience necessarily, but he has been involved in politics as the CEO of the chamber. And so he'll face one of five Democrats in November. That includes Kevin Stein, who was a Medford City Councilor since 2015. There's also Denise Krause, who people might remember. She most recently ran for the Jackson County Board of Commissioners in 2024, where she lost. There's also Tanya Morrow, who's a Rogue Valley attorney, and she also organized the opposition to the Jordan Cove fracked gas pipeline a few years ago. And then she also ran for the seat in 2016 and lost to Republican Alan DeBoer. Then there's also Christian Mendoza Ruvalcaba, who's an assistant professor of nursing at OHSU in Ashland. And then there's also Jim Crary, who's a retired lawyer who serves on the Pinehurst School Board in the Green Springs. So quite a range of candidates, and one of them will get picked in the primary to face off against Brad Hicks.
Yeah, one to watch there. There are also a few county races that have been notable. Start off by telling us about Josephine County.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There's two seats on the board that are going to be filled this year. Both are vacant because previous commissioners were recalled, Andreas Bleck and Chris Barnett. Those seats right now are filled by Colleen Martin and Gary Richardson, who were both appointed last month. Colleen Martin has filed to run for her seat for the full term. She had told me she was planning on running, and then she's going to be facing off against two of the previous commissioners in that seat, John West and Andreas Bleck, who was just recalled in December. And then West was actually also recalled last year.
Oh, wow.
And Bleck was appointed to fill the seat and then recalled himself. So we've got two recalled commissioners running to take back their seat. There's also four other people that have also filed to run for that seat. So seven candidates total on that. The other ones don't have as much political experience. There's a farmer, a small business owner, a substitute teacher, a couple of other people. For the other seat, Gary Richardson is not going to be running. He's just filling out the term. And there's eight candidates that have applied for that position.
Wow.
We don't really have time to go over all of their histories,
yeah,
but they do come from this variety of backgrounds. One notable person is Grants Pass City Councilor Indra Nicholas. And remember, in these races, if nobody gets above 50% of the vote in the primary, then the top two candidates there will head to the general election in November, you know, which based on the amount of candidates, it could be likely, especially in the second seat where there isn't an incumbent running.
Okay, and lastly, tell us about the races in Shasta County.
Yeah, there's more County Board of Supervisors races there. Two of the five seats are up for election, and they could change the balance of the board. I've covered the balance of power in Shasta County for a while. Two of the far-right supervisors, Kevin Cry and Chris Kellstrom, are running for re-election, and then they each have two candidates running against him. For Kevin Cry, we're kind of going to get a little bit of a rematch from his first election with Erin Resner. She's the current city council member for Reading, and she lost to Kevin Cry in 2020. By just 90 votes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then also running there is Rich Gallardo. He's a conservative activist in the county. He's most known for attempting to make a citizen's arrest against the entire Board of Supervisors in 2020 over COVID-19 restrictions. And then running against Chris Kellstrom is Michael Gallagher, a city council member in Anderson. He's also endorsed by the former supervisor, Tim Garman, who was going to run for that seat but dropped out of the race. And Garman was one of the more moderate members of the board. Then there's also Gary Oxley, who I don't have a lot of information about other than that he's a gun rights activist. So there's also an interesting race for county clerk in Shasta County. It's the county elections official. The current clerk there, Clint Curtis, was a controversial appointment by the board last year, and he's seeking to overhaul the election system in the county. He's right now running against Joanna Franciscat, who is the deputy county clerk until Curtis fired her shortly after taking office. So she's kind of representing the more traditional wing of county clerks and believes the current system works well and should be improved on, and she comes with 17 years of experience in elections, while Curtis had no experience prior to his appointment here. And since those are the only two running, that race is going to be decided in June. But the supervisors' races could go to the general election if nobody gets over 50% of the vote.
Okay, thanks, Roman.
Thanks, Maria.
And we'll be following all of these elections with more stories as we get closer to Election Day. Well, that was Roman Battaglia. Jane, you covered some news this week from Jackson County Fire District 5 in the Rogue Valley. First, give us some background on that district.
There is a lot of background. So Jackson County Fire District 5 covers Phoenix and Talent and unincorporated Ashland, and they've had some real turmoil over the last couple of years. Starting a couple years ago, they've had many board members resign. The board ended up firing its chief for cause. They're having a massive budget shortfall and have had some financial difficulties. They also have staffing concerns, not having enough staff. The Oregon Department of Justice was investigating potentially pursuing a criminal investigation into the district. There were concerns about possible fraud and theft and employee misconduct. They ended up not deciding to pursue that investigation, but that was a hiccup. That was something to follow there. And then the district is currently operating under an intergovernmental agreement with nearby Fire District 3 to help sort of save money and consolidate costs. So Fire District 3 is providing administrative support and oversight by their chief. And then, on top of all of this, in the fall, the Jackson County Fire District 5 board discovered that they owe FEMA a $1.4 million loan.
Ooh.
For a grant that the district had received back in 2023. And this board claimed they had no idea that this loan existed. This current chief and board all took over after it was authorized, and they said the previous administration failed to maintain the required records for the loan. So on top of all of that, they now have this $1.4 million loan. They also have about $8.2 million in other debts, and so there's a lot of things to figure out.
So they've got nearly $10 million in debt. What's new this week?
The news this week was that they decided not to use a tax levy to address some of the financial issues. They had been considering potentially putting a tax levy on the ballot in May. Residents had actually asked about using a tax levy at a community town hall earlier this year. They suggested it.
Yeah.
Some people, right?
Yeah.
And so the board discussed potentially doing anywhere from 25 cents to $1 per $1,000 of assessed value in an additional tax levy. The district is currently funded through a tax of $3.19 per $1,000 of assessed value. And there was a board meeting this week on Tuesday, and some residents spoke in favor of the tax levy. They thought it was a good idea. But the board ultimately decided not to move forward with it for sort of vague reasons. They were sort of alluding to lawsuits. The board chair, Greg Costanzo, said, you all don't know everything that we know. And so the district is in the middle of one lawsuit with a contractor, Tactical Business Group. That one is over alleged breach of contract. And then they have another lawsuit with its former chief, Charles Hanley, over alleged wrongful termination and defamation. So they were sort of alluding to these legal issues and saying that they can't really talk about everything that's happening, but they decided not to put a levy on the ballot.
Okay, well, what else happened at that meeting?
Relating to the lawsuit stuff, the board also authorized the chair, Greg Costanzo, and the chief, Mike Hussey, to represent the district in mediation with Tactical Business Group. So maybe they're working towards some sort of settlement or conclusion with that lawsuit. It's unclear, but they did authorize those two people to represent the district in mediation. That lawsuit I was looking online is currently scheduled for a pretrial conference in December, but that obviously could change.
And what about that $1.4 million FEMA loan?
There is actually some good news with that. So
oh.
The chief, Mike Hussey, said this week that the district likely qualifies for an extension to pay back that $1.4 million. So the loan is not forgiven, but it would give the district another year to finalize its audits, which it's still behind on, potentially figure out a way to pay back that money. The loan was originally due in full this spring, and the district kind of had no idea how to pay that back.
Yeah.
So this does give them a little bit more breathing room as they figure that stuff out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jane. Justin, you reported on changes to healthcare at Shasta County's jail. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, so this week, supervisors approved a new medical provider for the county's jail. So this is the company that staffs nurses and doctors, as well as mental health professionals in the jail. The current contract is with a company called WellPath, and they've faced some legal challenges over the years. So there's this Reuters story, which I linked in our story, that counted up over 1,500 lawsuits against that company related to its medical care in jails. And that includes its operation in Reading. So there was an over $11 million settlement following an inmate suicide in Reading, and the county had to pay some of that in 2023. So WellPath's contract was up this year, and supervisors were, you know, considering the county's future liability when they were choosing a new provider.
Yeah, and so who did the county go with?
They approved a contract with Medico. So that's a Virginia-based company, which mostly operates right now on the East Coast. There was a competitive bidding process. I think like eight companies put in bids. And this agreement is for $25 million for 3 years, which is significantly more than the current contract with
yeah.
WellPath. So that's around a 40% increase. But the sheriff's office and supervisors argued that it was worth it. So the number of staff with this new contract will just about double at the jail. And the sheriff referenced this grand jury investigation on the county's jail that came out recently. And that report started after five in-custody deaths happened at Shasta County's jail within a 13-month period. So the county wanted to know what was going on. And part of the findings was that the jail was really understaffed, and that was dangerous for inmates who could potentially harm themselves. So the county is hoping this Medico contract will at least relieve some staffing pressure there.
And so what do we know about Medico? What kind of company is it?
Well, besides providing more staff at the jail, for more money, to be fair, supervisors also talked about the company's legal record and compared that to WellPath's. They wanted to choose a company that would decrease their future liability because lawsuits can be quite expensive. And they claimed that Medico has never lost a judgment related to its medical care. And that might be true. I couldn't find any judgment against Medico, but I did find a number of lawsuits against the company where it operates in Virginia. Local news there reported the company has faced over a dozen lawsuits for medical malpractice or wrongful death since 2017. And the company currently has a number of lawsuits that are still active, still in court. So that clean record might not hold true in the near future.
Okay, and Justin, you also had an update this week on California's wolf livestock compensation program, not competition. What is that program all about?
So this helps ranchers cover costs associated with wolves in the state. It provided $3 million at first back in 2021, and then it's gotten more money down the line. But it offers these grants for ranchers. It provides money for direct losses, so if a wolf actually kills a cow or sheep. Also, indirect losses, and it funds non-lethal deterrence. So that could be fencing or livestock guardian dogs or something like that. And ranchers have really taken advantage of it. The program has paid out $3.6 million so far. And right now, they're looking at evaluating the program and seeing what might change in the program in the future.
And you also mentioned Siskiyou County is one of the biggest recipients.
Yeah, so out of that $3.6 million, $2 million went to Siskiyou. So Siskiyou County ranchers are really taking advantage of this.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.